you are going through and demolishing, destroying, eviscerating all of these hellspawn, ripping their hearts out, and then using their beating, bleeding hearts as currency.
It's a Wait, blood sacrifice, basically.
This is doom. This is doom. Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is episode 273. First things first, if you're watching the video version of our podcast on YouTube, you might notice something is different, and that is Nolan's shirt. It's a relatively new shirt. He's looking fairly stunning.
Thank you.
Kenny's beard is looking as magnificent as ever.
I mean, maybe more magnificent than ever. It does continue to grow.
And my eye, left eye, I don't know if it looks left or right to you, is all sorts of wrong. And
so, it looks like you walked down the wrong alley and got like punched in the face.
So we should see the other guy, right?
Yes, both of his eyes are absolutely fine because it is some kind of, I don't know, this happened last year, about a year ago. Do y'all remember?
I do.
And was the other eye. It would be terrible to get it in both eyes at the same time. But whatever this is, it's not pink eye. It's not a sty. It is a bacterial infection of sorts. I don't know what the problem is, but like Beyonce, I just woke up like this. All right, so you'll have to deal with that via video.
It's not going to bother me.
Okay, thank you. Kenny?
It won't bother me either.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say something snarky. Secondly, on that YouTube channel that some of you are watching us on, we just recently released a compilation of some of the greatest video game console startups throughout all of gaming history, including but not limited to the Famicom Disk System, the Atari Jaguar, which has a pretty lackluster one, the Dreamcast, Game Boy Color, many others. Boys, you've watched the video, but also you are both connoisseurs of retro gaming. Out of all of the handheld and home consoles, which startup is your favorite?
Kenny gave me a face. He doesn't know.
No. Favorite is just tricky. You go first, Nolan. But all
favorite is hard for
him. So I'll just say.
I should always ask, which one is good? That's all I should ask.
Which
Kenny
one's
from
just
now on.
Average? Kenny's like, I go first. I'll just say Sega.
Was that the Sega Genesis?
Yes. And the reason I choose that one is mostly just based on nostalgia. I think it's short and sweet. I like the animation that comes with it, especially on Sonic games where he like dashes and it comes on the screen. Sick. And also, I didn't want to pick PS1 because that's what everyone's answer is, and it's objectively super sick and the best.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sega.
I found out in some of my research that Sega Genesis actually didn't have like a set startup, that it was different per game.
Yeah, true.
But the one that is most notable is the one that has Sonic running across. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and those early consoles, a lot of them didn't have a startup. Like the N64 didn't have one, but the disk drive one did.
Right. Well, a lot of console, you know, developers wanted probably to get you into the game as fast as possible, and so they didn't have some of the consoles. I know that early ones did. They didn't have music, so I didn't include some of those. Yeah. And then they did for a while. We don't really much have them anymore, or they're really quick. The Nintendo Switch one's actually really sweet, but it's just that.
I love that. I love that. But also, all these new consoles want you in the game even faster, so they save your right where you turn the console off.
Yeah,
so
they
it's like
drop you just into your last state, and it's crazy.
What were you gonna say, Ken?
I was just gonna tell you like which ones hit me in good ways.
Please tell me.
I will
hit you in the eye.
So both of the Xbox and Xbox 360, both did some fun nostalgia things for me. Also a couple of the Genesis ones, but the one that surprisingly just made me, like, super nostalgic.
You went straight to the worst one.
I just opened my mouth. Xbox
is garbage.
No, but I have emotional connection to it. It's not but good. It's
Mountain more... Dew looking.
Yeah.
It's totally like year appropriate. It's real like feeling like you were there. The one that both took me back and got me hyped and made me feel like I was about to play a game though was the Game Boy. Simple, quick, but
love it.
Just that little like drop in and the noise it makes. And I was just like, ding. Oh, it's about to go down. I got so hyped hearing that. I don't know why.
All three of those, the Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance, they're all variations of one another, which is just great. You know, it's brilliant. You know, they're all in the same family, but they are so crisp, so clean, and so perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nolan, you had also remarked to me about the PSP. Is that what it was that you said the little jingle the thing at the beginning? Yeah. It's really nice.
I love that one.
Okay, so PlayStation, you left it for me. I appreciate it. I just think the PlayStation 1 and 2 do really well, but there is something so good about that original PlayStation startup. It has this low end, and it's just so good.
So much effort went into it, and it shows. It's so good.
I would love to be a part of a team, or at least be a fly on the wall to watch a team come up with something like this, because it's got to be so short, but so memorable, too, is what they're going
iconic.
For. There's something absolutely warming, iconic, nostalgic about these sights and sounds. Some people might even consider them angelic. I kid. I care especially about these older consoles. Something
you can't have that one.
Well, there's something so special about them. I'd pit them against any modern day console.
You're only allowed one. You can't have five.
No Palutena love.
How am I going to mix Palutena in any of this? Like in our retro game of the week, Kid Icarus.
Overview.
Kid Icarus, also known in Japan as A Mythology of Light, the Mirror of Palutena, which her name for us is Palutena. Is that correct, Nolan?
Yep.
Okay. Is a 1986 action platformer for the Famicom and for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was developed by Nintendo's Research and Development 1 division and co-developed with TOSE, T-O-S-E. From Nintendo's Research and Development 1, that division, are some of the same creators actually came over from creating Metroid. Or Metroid was also 1986, wasn't it? So I don't know which. I think Metroid was first, and then they came over, some of those developers, and created this. But it's really nothing like Metroid, in my opinion.
Intelligent Systems programmed it. And they did Metroid. They carried the NES. They did original Mario Bros. They did Duck Hunt. So, yeah. Same excellent team.
Well, and so Metroid is all about exploration, right? Kid Icarus is all about just getting to the end of the level. There is some exploration in the castle-like stages, which we'll eventually talk about, but really, it's very different than Metroid altogether.
Yeah.
I never played this one growing up, but I think I mentioned on the end of last episode, I did own the sequel, actually, of Myths and Monsters. Is that what it's called?
On the
Game Boy. And so this is one of the few games that my brother and I would play as we traveled in our parents' car, a backseat, you know, swapping out back and forth. Very similar gameplay style to this, but handheld is really cool.
Can we talk about Cupid as a protagonist?
You think this is Cupid?
I mean, it's not, but it might as well be.
He's shooting heart. On the cover, he's shooting a bone arrow on with a heart arrow.
Yeah, that's on the cover, but in the game, it's not heart arrows, and he's completely, like, demolishing all of these vile hell spawn that are coming
Cupid
at
was
him.
The model they based off of, for sure.
Or did Cupid Cupid model off of Pit?
Oh, Pit came first.
Asking the real question.
So, I was introduced to Pit through Smash. And I think a lot of people were. You weren't, Dustin, but I was wondering, like, what was the decision of putting him in Smash? Was it literally just a throwback decision? Like, hey, pay some homage to the early games, or were they trying to, like, sell Kid Icarus cards? Like, it just seems like a weird character to throw in there.
He's part of their, like, classic catalog. And he's different. Like, he's not
very different.
Like, archetype happily, yeah, it's a word. He's not like some of the others that are so similar to each other. And so I think he's a great choice for Smash. I don't know him in Smash to know if his kit translates well or anything, but I like the idea of his character.
Yeah. Yeah, they always do a good job of translating like 2D characters and giving them movesets. So he's good.
That will be super interesting to me because I'm not much of a Smash player. I don't think Kenny necessarily is either. But
not Nolan, these days.
You were and have been. So you are very familiar with what's what in this area. I'm going to love to hear, like, don't do it now, but as we talk about gameplay, I'd love to hear how some of those abilities and characteristics translate, because both Pit and Palutena are in Smash now, correct?
Yes, and Dark Pit.
Ooh,
interesting. Which I wonder if that is an actual character.
It must be. Yeah.
Okay. Well, was Dark Link an actual character?
Yeah.
Okay. Like in the Zelda universe.
In OOT, yeah, you fight him. And he's in other Zeldas too.
Okay. Well, interesting. So that will be interesting. Was the first Smash that Pit was in, was that Brawl?
Correct.
Okay.
And I believe they referenced Kid Icarus either in a track or in a trophy in 64 or Melee, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Okay, so my introduction to Kid Icarus to Pit was the sequel. Yours was Brawl, and then Kenny, yours was our retro game of the week.
Was playing it this week, yeah.
Was Cupid.
Okay, what was Cupid? One Valentine's Day long ago. Okay, awesome. Let me give a little bit of story. We are in Kingdom Angel Land.
Love
and unfortunately,
place.
It has Clearly. Been taken over by the very vile, very evil Medusa. And our protagonist, Pit, sets out on his quest to find 3 sacred treasures so that he might equip them to rescue Angel Land and its ruler, Goddess Palutena, Palutena, whatever her name is, the green-haired goddess Palutena. So that's what you're doing. You're ascending the different levels of the kingdom, fighting enemies to eventually take out Medusa and rescue the goddess of the land.
Gameplay.
It's on Nintendo Switch Online. So I get to play that this week. We talked about that a while back when it was first teased that Nintendo Switch Online would have this access to classic games. And maybe we've used it once or twice, but this game's on there. And so I continued my playthrough on that version. The first play was not the Nintendo Switch version.
Right. Okay, so you did the first play and then you played the rest of the week on the Switch?
Correct. Okay. Yes. And there's like slight differences worth mentioning. One really big one later. But I'll say that the first feel when I started this game up felt actually like an arcade game. Did you guys feel that at all? I think I mentioned it in my first play. Really? Okay.
Massively.
I thought I would get made fun of for saying that.
No, tons of elements that feel arcadey to me. Partly it's the screen wrapping, which I know other games do.
Oh, but that does feel kind of distinctly arcade. Right.
Yeah, but it feels older and sort of arcade. Even the games that do it, you know, like
Doo-doo.
Mario 3 and whatever, where you get that old school dual version where you run around. Those all feel dated. But then even more than that, the enemies that come flying in and they come sort of in patterns.
Galaga style. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're sort of in front of everything, not on platforms as much, feels 100% like a Galaga or something. It has heavy arcade vibes. Yeah. I got that too.
Cool. And for me, the hint were those things, but also the verticality of the stage versus a left to right experience, which was more common on home consoles on the NES, I feel.
Yep. More arcade. Since you're scrolling this way or progressing this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least at first, I thought because the first sort of levels were that we were going to get a whole game of that, but that doesn't continue the whole time, which was a really, really welcome change. I was going to get really sick of just the vertical climb, but it starts with a really heavy vertical climb.
So you're shooting your bow and arrow as Cupid kid, Icarus.
Pit.
Who's Kid Icarus?
Pit.
Okay. So K.I. the Pit Man. He's got 30 names. You're shooting enemies with your bow and arrow, and you're platforming up. And there's screen wrapping as well. So it's just the game's introduced as shoot some enemies, collect hearts that they drop, and go up. And then the game decides that it wants to be Zelda.
Yeah, and then everything changes, and you're in a fortress maze.
Items become relevant now. Like, a lot changes. Like, okay, I don't even know where to start. But then it changes again. It turns into Mario 1. after the dungeons, it's like, okay, we're outside going left to right Mario style. This game did a bunch of different gameplay things, and it's actually going to take a second to break them all down. So I just want to lay out that that framework first.
So I said it was an action platformer, and it is, but it's also kind of RPG-ish. You've got an experience system. You've got a health bar that grows. You've got items that you equip, and you've got items that you use, like you mentioned, Nolan. Like, you're collecting these hammers that you can't ever switch to, and you're like, what are these for? And then you get to the fortress, and you can use them to get aids, these guardian... Right? Like, friends to fight with you on the boss of that level. Like, it is a weird title doing unique things.
And absolutely, I think it's more an action RPG than it is anything else. It just happens to have, you know, vertical elements and side-scrolling elements and platforming elements and all the other stuff. But the whole story, you've got this character and you're leveling him up and getting him new skills and all the stuff that comes more with that genre.
Well, it's just a very experimental game. Yeah. And I did not expect that at all.
From
again,
Nintendo.
86 is a long time ago. That's a year after the NES came out in the States.
I think that's the story here, is they were like,
Wishbone,
well, let's try some stuff. You know, like 86 is fairly early in NES era. And I think they were just sort of experimenting, you know, like, let's try and see what works. And
all right. So let's break down those different genres. Let's talk about platforming first. I think that one's the easiest, right? Although on the first stage ish or the first few stages you're going up, that's unique, but it's still platforming. You're jumping from platform to platform,
dodging enemies.
Even on the first stage on little squares, like they're not giving you much latitude on these early stages. And that early stage, although it goes left to right eventually, mm-hmm. you might spend the first 25 hours of your gameplay going vertical because it's not easy platforming.
No, it's hard. And so anytime I see those vertical stages, here's what I get terrified of, or I thought I always get terrified of. Mario or some of the games that have elements of this where I've done similar kinds of things, you go and you go and you go and you go and you make all this progress and then you fall off and you just fall and fall and fall and suddenly you're back at the very start and it's like, oh man, that's a bummer.
That's and worse. So, I mean, no, that's better than what it is.
Right. And so I was like, well, I hope that doesn't happen. And then that didn't happen, and it was worse. Talk about how this game does that, because it's so bad.
Nolan, well, you can, because you experienced it, but I just want to point people to your first play, because you can see it in real time. Nolan, just talking, chatting with the crew, and doesn't understand what happens until a good few seconds after it happened.
Well, I guess I didn't realize how early this game was, and I guess at the time, that wasn't well established. I think at the time, hitting the bottom of the screen means death. But for me, like in Metroid, hitting the bottom of the screen going up vertical means you just fall and lose some progress. Annoying, but I'll start over. No, if Pit touches the bottom of the screen at any point, doomsday, you're dead. Off with his head. And you have to start over. And that first play was pretty frustrating. I did not get far. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I think they could tell that this was going to be a tough mechanic because they did try and give you ways to deal with it. You had those feather things that you could get and collect.
Careful, that's going outside of platforming, though.
Yeah, you're right. But we'll get to itemization and talk about that eventually. Either way, it was a really rough mechanic, and this game like almost reverse difficulties. Like that first climb, I probably had more of a hard time. And some of that's because you're getting used to the game. But then it really levels out once you get past the vertical stuff.
It levels out once you get past the vertical stuff?
Yeah.
To more of a horizontal level is what you might say. So if you're not following along and if you haven't played this game with us, the pit underneath pit is scrolling with you. So as you continue to ascend, the pit continues to ascend. So there is danger in falling. Thankfully, when you get to the horizontal levels, you don't die if you walk too far to the left. You're still okay. Right. That would be hilarious,
That's the equivalent. That's how bad that mechanic is in my mind.
Yeah. Okay, so I felt that the platforming was slippery. I'll say this. The handling is consistent, but I think it is consistent internally, but it is inconsistent with other platforming of its time and how it's evolved.
It definitely takes some getting used to, and it's not like my favorite feel. You know, there's some games that we play them and we're like, oh man, that was just like smooth, like perfection. You had to adjust here, but at least it sort of consistently followed those rules.
It does follow those rules. I just don't like them.
It is a little slippery. It's one of those games where when you land from a jump, he takes like a step or two and you'll fall. If you're on a like one by one thing, you're done. And it's almost like ice mechanics.
There is actual ice you have to deal with. Now, on top of that, which is even worse because it like pronounces that effect. And then there's also the fact that you can, at least on certain platforms, I don't know that it was on all of them, you can duck and then go through the platform.
So you want to talk about the worst mechanic? Is that what you want to do? You want to go straight there? Because I thought the eggplant man or guys were the worst, and they are. Yes. But pressing down on platforms that you've already been taught to press down to avoid certain missiles that come at you, and you immediately falling through those platforms into the pit is not right and a bad design.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like backtracking design like that. It doesn't make sense. It only frustrates, and you don't learn anything because then you stop trusting every platform you jump on.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're consistent and if there's like reason for some of those things, sure, like give us those options. That's cool. We'll learn to play around them. But when it's like you had all these projectiles and you've been ducking them and it hasn't been a problem, and suddenly you duck a projectile and then you just like everything falls apart, it's not great.
Yeah, that was probably my most frustrating thing, because even on the horizontal stages, you've got various pits along the way. And so I multiple times lost a life due to just pressing down, not on a thin platform, but on like a mountain. I was on like one of the hills and shouldn't have fallen down. And they could have easily made it where it's a double tap down or something to sink under. But it was just the pressing once on the D-pad down and you're going through. It's frustrating. All right. Yeah. So that's platforming, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay. We covered that thoroughly. What will we call the next aspect? I would say dungeoning.
So you're talking about the castle type portions, like the final stages of each? It's kind of like Mario, right? In that there's like 1-1, 1-2, 1-3. And on that final one, you go into this castle-like thing, and it's kind of like Zelda. Dungeoning.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's Zelda differently. You know, you're still going sort of, I don't know, vertically and sideways, taking these ladders between stuff.
Is that Zelda 1 and 2? Is that Zelda 2? I don't remember.
Zelda 2 is the platformer.
Right.
Yes.
But is it dungeoning?
I don't know. But in these stages, it's so different. Your HUD changes. You go from having nothing on your screen, really, except for your health and your hearts that you're collecting, which end up being currency. I joked about that in the first play, and that's exactly what they are.
Which we'll talk about that in the RPG section.
Yeah, yeah. Your HUD changes, and it shows that you're using like arrows, and it's got like what's the stage that you're on and your health and hearts, and it's just like it takes on a whole different thing. Puzzles, not so much, but kind of.
I mean, kind of, the whole thing is sort of maze-ish.
It's easy to get lost. Yeah.
It's super easy to get lost. There's this whole element of, like, you can get a map and you can get an item that, like, makes you highlight where you are.
Kind of like a map and a compass, would you say?
Exactly. It's very, very Zelda dungeony, yeah. but different.
And along that, there's so many rooms. It's easy to get lost. You've got healing chambers that are in there. You've got little medical chambers for if you do get hit by an eggplant, which we'll get around to eventually. You've got all sorts of different variety of enemies, but you're really just trying to make your way. You don't have to get keys, right? No.
Nah.
You're making your way through to try to find the correct path to the boss.
Yeah, no keys, but you are getting these little side rooms you can go in that are... They can have a variety of different things in them. Like, there's some complexity here.
And the hammer becomes right. useful. Because in the first sections, the platforming only sections, you're collecting these hammers and your health isn't going up and your hearts aren't going up and nothing's changing. And I'm like, okay.
I was confused, yeah.
What is this?
And you're it turns getting out other it's, stuff, though, that it's not clear what it sure. does at first.
A lot of this game is that, and that was the case for a lot of NES games. But there are a lot of mechanics here that just were not introduced properly, and then like later become relevant. And I was not a fan of that. But you can use the hammer in these sections, is what I'm saying.
We're playing this in 2020. If you're playing this game in 1987,
you're not asking.
You've got
questions.
A booklet.
Okay, yeah, very so true.
I guess not if it's a rental, but like you've got the booklet and it explains stuff. That was a really normal mode of operation back Fair. Then.
I had and used the booklet this week, and part of it is really good, but part of it is not. Like, so it does explain what the different items are. It even has a map actually of kind of each realm world
like the
stage
worlds. Yeah the yeah, sort of to, sets of
to,
stages
to
and how
some degree tells you about the enemies, so there is a good amount of information in there, but it still doesn't tell you all the details that you know, so a lot of it is discovery. But you were doing that at 1986. You were finding out yeah, figuring out true. and some of the things were conventional, so you were taking game knowledge from other games and bringing it into these games. This one is one of them, although yeah, like you're saying, this kind of like dungeoning thing was tough here. And, and if you can make it through, you get to a boss kind of like in Zelda. They're all kind of different, but, and you fight them one-on-one or 20-on-1. If yeah. you use enough hammers to wake up the guardians, they come in like a swarm of bees and fight alongside of you to take out the boss. And they were so helpful.
Yeah, for sure. So sick. I really enjoyed these sections. And I thought the rest of the game would continue that. Like, I didn't, at the time, the first one, I didn't pick up that I was at the end of the world section. You know what I mean? Like, right. 1-whatever. So I was like, oh, okay, we're just shifting gears here. But this was definitely my favorite gameplay aspect, probably okay. because of the Zelda familiarity.
Well, it's gotta be. Because it was not my favorite aspect. It was yep. probably my least favorite aspect of them. I mean, honestly, I would go RPG, platform, and then dungeon if we're talking about those three.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm probably more in Dustin's camp. But again, personal preference. I did like that it broke things up. There's so many games that were like, same thing over and over and over again. You know, same level 14 times. Oh, sure. Hey, have some creativity. And this one not only changed how each world looks and functions, but gave you that sweet little, like, it's not like you're getting to the end, you just get a boss. It's like, no, you've got to get through this whole dungeon to even get to the boss. And so you just get more, I don't know, more like types of gameplay scattered throughout. And I at least really liked that variety. You could tell they were trying really hard on this game.
Let's talk about the RPG nature of the game, those elements. So you already mentioned as you're killing enemies, you're collecting hearts of three varying sizes.
Which is so confusing because
it is.
Every game ever, hearts are health. Health. That's what yep. they are. They refill your hearts. And so I was seeing like big hearts and I was like, is this Zelda? Is my bar going to go up? Is it expanding? You know, but it's not. It's just hearts are rupees and it doesn't hearts make sense, rupees. Except for the fact that we all know he's Cupid. So and apparently you collect hearts.
Absolutely. And when you kill enemies, you rip the hearts out of them. That's why I'm saying this is a...
accurate.
You are going through and demolishing, destroying, eviscerating all of these hell spawn, ripping their hearts out, and then using their beating, bleeding hearts as currency.
Trading in those monster parts.
It's not playing around.
I would love, it's a blood sacrifice, basically.
This is Doom. This is Doom.
Kid Icarus is Doom.
You are using those heart pieces at various stops along the way. So as you're platforming, there are these doors that you can go into. Oddly enough, the very first one is an empty room. Nothing happens, and that will always be that way because, Nolan, there, as an RPG, there's certain rooms that you can go into at certain times when you have enough experience, and someone will show up and grant you an upgrade to one of your items. If you haven't reached that experience level yet, it will just be an empty room. And so for some reason, that's how Nintendo Research and Development 1 coded this game. They gave you a first room.
So that first room will never have a merchant.
As far as I know, it's going to be empty all the time.
There's ways, like on a like a replay of the game or different kinds of things that you can like
get somebody new game plus.
To get there. Yeah, but on a normal playthrough for like a normal person not trying to like exploit systems, it's going to always be empty.
So you're using these items to purchase, you're using these hearts to purchase items. By the way, you have those three different size hearts. You have just a little heart that is worth one. You have half of a big heart, which is worth five, I think. And then you have a full big heart, which is worth 10. And you can collect up to 999, and you've got a counter on the screen. And then you can use those at your shops to purchase either health items or not extenders, but ones that can replenish health. I think Kenny mentioned earlier a feather that if you do fall in a pit, it will bring you back up. So it's kind of like a plus one, you know, it saves you from, death. A phoenix down, if you will.
Yeah, but like specifically for falling.
Sure. And then you can also purchase upgrades to your kit. Yeah, you can purchase hammers for those stages, or you can purchase three different items, I think. You can purchase a bow that extends the range of your arrows. You can purchase a fire upgrade, which makes your arrows be able to hit multiple enemies, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then you can purchase this rod that gives you like a defense. It gives you maybe two hits before it takes damage.
Know what that was.
Yeah, but those are those you only get sort of at like specific points. Your sort of day-to-day items are all there. You also have the barrel, which I think holds additional like health vials so that you can have more of them.
And here's the thing, you've got to have the manual to know these things because it does not explain
that's
it.
That's why
the
my
game.
Face is contorted because all but of these, when, this is new information.
When you press pause, it doesn't just pause the game, it opens up your menu and you've got a whole bunch of space there. Kenny, let me say real quick, because you had mentioned that you get those at predetermined times, and I understand what you're saying, but there are certain enemies that can snatch those items that I just mentioned, the fire, the bow, the rod, and steal them from you, and then you can come across the black market, which will sell them at a upgraded price, which will make you pay.
If it sounds like there's a ton of complexity here
we're probably
for
going
a
too
1986,
deep.
What looks like a simple platformer, that's because there is. That's what I mean. We're already at an insane amount of complexity without even talking about the fact that there's both a point system where at the end of the level you're getting points, and that's determining whether I think you're getting health bar increases, but also like a hidden skill system where based on sort of this invisible point counter that you're getting up, that you're either getting these other upgrades to like your strength or not. It's just, there is a lot to this game.
But is invisible visible?
I mean, I don't think it shows anywhere that actual metric, but
wait,
may have
so
just
what is
it.
Invisible? Is that?
No, he's asking.
I'm asking you, you said it's
it's not a real word. It's like a hidden system. I don't think your skill rating shows anywhere in the game. Maybe it does.
Got you. So, so like how some people would say invisible?
Stop. And we were talking about a bunch of complex mechanics. I'm actually okay with it because they all make sense eventually. If I had the book, it would have helped a little bit. Apparently not too much. But the fact that you're actually using these hammers. There's some like hidden systems. I'm okay with all of that. And with the heart collection and the barter system, I actually really like it here. I typically don't utilize that option in games like this. But in this game, it incentivizes killing enemies over skipping them, which is very, very, very tempting to do in this game because of the difficulty. I think difficulty is a little bit of a problem at times. But you need to be killing them because this stuff is expensive. It's not cheap stuff that you buy, except for the hammers.
Right. Like, I mean, they're like 450, 500 easy. And so that's half your heart. So you've got to be killing things at all times. And it's not always the easiest when you're stuck as an eggplant. So I've mentioned it a few times and just want to talk about it one last time. There are eggplant enemies that slowly toss out eggplants. And if one of those eggplants hit you, then you turn into a walking eggplant. Did the eggplant make it into Smash at all?
Oh, certainly. I don't know, but
it's
probably.
Got to. It's has so to. Meme.
It's such a meme. So yeah, meme-y. There's it's got to be in there probably.
Because
yeah.
You're stuck as this guy and there's only one way to get out. Two ways. I think you can die, right? Or think you have to somehow go and find a nurse that is just in one random room in that massive like palace that you get
it's
lost in dungeon and find her, and she will turn you back into a human that does not then inoculate you, which is the first time I've used that word on this podcast, from
Congrats.
Turning back into an eggplant, because you can just walk right back into the room and get hit by an eggplant again. And if you can't tell, it happened to me.
You didn't like that mechanic?
No!
I feel like someone in 2021 made that mechanic. That aged great.
For great this year in particular. Yeah,
it is such a meme. It's just, what were they thinking?
Yeah, they were being very mean.
Aged
1986 to 2021 is a long time.
A long time.
How many? That's like
that's a bunch of
here,
that's math.
1986, 1987, 88,
89. Are you gonna count all the way? Is that how you do math?
Kenny, what is it? Quick maths, go 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I don't know. It's about 35 years.
Okay.
Approximately.
Yeah, that's 1 year after the NES was released in America.
So we're early console era.
Yes.
And
keep that in mind.
So there are a few different elements that we typically talk about when it comes to aged. We typically talk about how the graphics held up and we talk about how the music held up. That's at least some of them, how the handling. Nolan, when you played the first play, immediately you kind of pulled your earphones away from your your head because you thought this sound was piercing, right?
Yeah.
And it is. But I thought the music all throughout what I played was indeed piercing, but was beautiful.
Nothing as piercing as the title song. that one hurts. But the rest of the soundtrack, varied, awesome, on theme, loved it. So good.
Yeah, you're pretty limited with what you can do in 1986 on this hardware, and I think they did a good job living in that. Because of how early this game was, and because of the experimental kinds of stuff they did, and because it has that classic sort of 8-bit music sound thing going on, this one just felt so like classic Nintendo to me. Mm-hmm. But in like good ways. I know there's frustrating things about, you know, Nintendo Hard and some of that kind of stuff, and obviously this game has some things we've already complained about, but for some reason, not even knowing this game, and I think a lot of it is because of that music, this one just felt like, man, how did I not play this as a kid? Because it was right up Nintendo alley, and that's where I live.
Yes.
They actually had to, you had mentioned the Famicom, they actually had to make differences between the Famicom and the NES because I believe the Famicom could actually hold more than what the NES could. And so the soundtrack, the OST, the music is all enhanced in the Famicom, or really dehanced in the NES version.
Right. If you get made fun of, if I get made fun of for saying invisible, you get made fun of for saying dehance.
I will also say, as we're, I know it's not the music side of things, but it is the Famicom to NES and it is aged. Famicom actually had straight up 3 save slots, which is huge.
Crazy.
In this version, it's actually nice. I thought what they were able to do with 1986, they at least had some kind of thing you didn't have to beat it in one sitting. They had a password situation going on here in the NES version.
Very common.
Now, it's 64 different alphanumeric characters because it saves a lot of information. But to sit there and type out 64 and get it right?
Yeah. Well, it'll take you as long to just replay the game to that point.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would rather the save, but it does it so that it remembers what items you had, your experience level, where you are, all of those things. And to be able to remember all that through an alphanumeric system is pretty impressive.
Yes. One of the more colorful games I've seen on the system, period. Yes.
I don't think the background is absolute. The backgrounds are typically black. Elaborate. You know, a lot of them are sometimes just solid color screens.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of different enemy variety. Pit looks fine.
I feel like people are going to be torn on this because I did like the graphics personally, but I feel like it really has, again, sort of this arcadey vibe. They're not bad. And there were places I ran into some slowdown and, you know, some of those kind of issues. I like, even though it was super simple and it was just sort of like color palette swaps, I love that as Pit gets upgraded, that you're getting like green. Different colors for him. That's super good and seemed like a natural progression. Like he looked like he was going to do more damage as he did. And so there were definitely some things visually that I liked. I enjoyed it, but I don't feel like it's going to be everybody's cup of tea. You look at some... like Nintendo games, you look at, I mean, Mario 3, which is an unfairly high bar and later, and I get it, but it's just like stunningly beautiful and perfect and cohesive. I don't feel like this is that, but I liked it anyways.
I mean, it almost looked like an early PC platformer to me at times. Like monster variety was through the roof. That wasn't
there were a
common.
Ton of different monsters.
That wasn't common. They would come up with like five, maybe like just a handful of models.
And different monster behavior too, which is really nice. Yes. We didn't talk about that a lot, but they do different things. The same thing over and over for each like type of monster, but a good variety of them. And real different, falling out of jars and popping up out of the ground and shooting or not shooting or moving or on platforms or not. Good choice on monsters.
And they take different hit amounts.
Right.
You know?
Tougher monsters, weaker monsters, all of that.
Yeah. Pretty remarkable, the uniqueness and the differences on all of those things. With the handling and how it's aged, I'm just going to go back to the way that it was created. I don't think that ages well because of the direction that platform handling progressed and went was not the more flighty, more now floaty. I felt like he did have some float, but he has little wings on him, and so I think that really works.
Lower
but I'm
friendly.
Talking about the slippery nature of things. It's not easy to correct your direction or momentum mid-air.
No, it's
kind of like Karnov back when we played Karnov. Do you remember that arcade game?
I forgot about that game.
Yeah.
And so those are some of the things that I feel like age really or age a lot. And then I do think just this whole concept of trying to do three different major kinds of genres, I think that's a strike against it because others just didn't do it. And they kind of like found their lane and went in it. I'm not saying they didn't do it right or they didn't do it well. I'm just saying that age-wise, that's not what people really did.
I think they could have refined it, but it actually is one of the things that I think intrigues me about it because it stands out from the crowd of older games. And so for me, that piece at least ages really well. I loved the variety. It definitely isn't as cohesive as it could be. Like they haven't figured out how to do this game with a little bit of each of those elements perfectly yet. But I really like that.
Nolan, Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
This is kind of Shovel Knight.
Oh, I'm sure
Shovel
they
Knight
it.
Does platforming.
Yeah.
Do you buy things? Don't you collect currency?
Yeah.
And
do you shovel out people's hearts in that game?
Yeah. He said no.
Why did you why you gave him a laugh at that?
I say yeah to everything. Okay.
All right. So there are sequels. There's two sequels. There's one that came out shortly after Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters for the Game Boy, which I've already mentioned. And then there's one that came out many, many, many years later in Kid Icarus Uprising for the Nintendo 3DS.
Sure
That's
enough.
How That's how spread out these things are. So 1986, yep. Kid Icarus, 1991, of Myths and Monsters, 2012, mm-hmm. Uprising.
I would love to see how that one plays. Actually, I have no idea.
He's still a kid. I feel like it ought to be Kid Icarus, Teenage Icarus, you know, middle-aged man with a life crisis Icarus.
Well, at
adult
the...
Icarus.
at the end of this game, if you, I think that actually the NES version has multiple endings, but
yeah, can we talk about that? Multiple endings. This game had complexity.
Do you get to kiss Palutena on the mouth?
Well, you do turn up into, you do turn adult in a flash. So I think there's a little
creepy
bit of romance going on there.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
Somebody call Chris Hansen.
Maybe Medusa's magic turned adult Icarus, adult Pit, into kid. That's into anyways. That's my theory. If you do want a copy of the NES version of Kid Icarus, you want that cartridge, you're just going to be paying $16 used. But in what might be the biggest gap yet, you're going to pay $800 for it brand new.
Whoa,
800 hearts.
Well,
dang.
So go start ripping the hearts out of your enemies, and it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. The vote does require 2/3 to swing one way or the other. I'll begin by saying that anytime we come to a platformer, I say, listen, I need to have fun, but a platformer, to be good in my book, needs to do one of two things. It either needs to have character progression, where your character is evolving and getting better and trying new things as you go along the game, or the stages need to evolve, the challenges need to evolve. This game had those two and everything else. Like, it had, you are, it's not evolving throughout the, it's evolving every step of the way. And then it's, and then it devolves back to something else. And then it changes to tracks entirely. And then, like, it's all over the map. And so I think it is going to be an extremely divisive game. What is surprising me in this one is that it seems like the three of us are falling in similar places. And I've read some of the commentary from our listeners this week, and I think the majority of them are not falling.
Oh, I got knuckle sandwiches for everybody.
But it will be interesting to see where the three of us land. Okay. I've gone back and forth this week because I did spend entirely too much time on that first world because it is not easy and it is not forgiving. But as I continue to progress, as difficult as this game is, it's fun. It's got charm. It does what it's trying to do well. It could go for more explanation, not exploration, more explanation. It could have better save functions and stuff like that. But man, I just think that it is charming. It is difficult. It is cute. It is fun. There's a reason why Pit and Palutena made it to Smash. And I think this game is good. So I give it my vote for New Game Plus status.
I'm a little surprised. I wasn't expecting that. You spent a lot of time talking about, you know, hating the fall mechanic and the eggplant situation and all of those things. And so I was thinking that there were enough flaws with this game that they were going to take it from you, Dustin, but they didn't. And I do think this game has flaws. It's certainly imperfect, but I was kind of okay with that. Okay, so you go to a buffet. You get a little bit of everything and you can enjoy what you like. You're not expecting the quality of the food to be as good as something that's just dedicated to one thing.
I don't know.
And that's kind of what this game has going on. It's a little bit of everything and in some really fun ways that I was able to pick at the parts that I liked and sort of ignore the parts that were gross, or like the fact that the one kid, you know, like sneezed on the mashed potatoes and then I just didn't eat the mashed potatoes. And so, yes, not everybody's going to like this game. Like, people may not want to go eat at a buffet, but I'm a buffet guy and I liked Kid Icarus. I think for some of the same reasons you said, Dustin, it was the stuff it did well were things that I like and it felt nostalgic in really fun ways. Yes, it was hard. Yes, it was frustrating. Yes, there's things that were absolutely terrible choices. But I think it's a classic in all the right kinds of classic ways. So yeah, NGP for me too.
This is a marvel for 1986. And for me, it was a hidden gem. I knew about it, but I had never played it, never wanted to play it, didn't know how it played. You typically kind of know how games play. You know Metroid's a platformer, but you explore and you fight bosses and you get upgrades. You know Mega Man gets the boss's power up. I had no clue. And from the outside looking in, it doesn't look that appealing. It's kind of, it looks like a Cupid game. It looks weird.
Yeah, it looks kind of dumb. It just does. Like at a glance.
Bad cover art. But the game is excellent. It looks good. It sounds good. It feels good. And I think everyone should play this game. This is the NES. And if you haven't played it, you should. It's excellent. And I'll say the difficulty is problematic. It is. But if you play on Switch, you have save states. That Nintendo Switch Online thing allows you to just save and go back and try again. And I recommend playing it with save states. And you will have a great time.
All three of us gave it our vote, which means Kid Icarus is New Game Plus certified. What did you think? We probably have the most ever write in this week, which is really cool. Really cool. I think probably at least a dozen or so people wrote in. I can't possibly read all of them now, but I wanted to get a few voices that we hadn't heard before or heard much of. But you can read the full thoughts of everybody's commentary in our Discord channel in the commentary section there. But Sin Doctor said, so I've heard about this game forever, and especially since the Brawl era brought it into the Smash world, but this was the first time I've actually tried playing it for myself. While I think some of the sprites are cool looking and the controls are fine and all, I'm really finding myself getting kind of aggravated playing this game. The music is catchy and I recognize some of the songs coming back from Smash titles, but there's moments it's also very piercing and kind of obnoxious. I like the Grim Reaper animation and some of the other enemies too, but overall this game is just kind of missing something for me. I sort of wonder if Pit would have fallen into obscurity, would it not be for Smash, and even still, he never did much for me as a character, so no NGP for me.
Yes, he would have. Smash absolutely kept him alive, revived him. I do like the animation of the Grim Reaper. I hate the enemy. Terrible enemy.
Yeah. And the sound effect kind of drove me crazy.
And you've got to jump past him because you can't. It takes forever to kill him.
He'll just keep summoning his minions. It's the worst.
Oh, he is the worst. Joey K said, Kid Icarus is definitely a difficult game to play, although somewhat intriguing at the same time. I played this game over several hours, finding myself frustrated, but at the same time, wanting to keep playing. I'm not sure if it's my competitive nature that made me want to make it to the end, or the diverse gameplay that this game offers. I think I would have enjoyed the game more if it guided you a little bit to understand the items and overall gameplay system. After all of my ranting about this game, I found myself wanting to give it New Game Plus status. However, I could not get over the clunky mechanics and the lack of understanding of the overall gameplay. I'm curious to see what the consensus is, but this is not a game I could recommend for the reasons above.
Go with your heart, man. Your heart said it was New Game Plus, and
Those booklets really were critical back then, and that always ages poorly because we've learned we need to explain mechanics in games now, but they didn't have the space, I don't think. So, you know, whatever.
They didn't, and then it just wasn't the custom. People weren't explaining things. They were like, read the entire story in the book because we're not going to include it in the game. Movie. Like, we've seen that. All right. Lions said, the tragedy of Kid Icarus is that it's an action RPG masquerading as a platformer. Upgrades at the shops and in between levels can easily be missed, and unlimited continues means a player can easily continue themselves into a corner. The game doesn't do much to tell players these upgrades are critical for any chance of success, and the manual reads more like a general video game advice and not the very specific instructions it is supposed to be. If you know to kill everything, get every upgrade, and buy certain items at the right time, then you may be able to win. The alternating vertical and horizontal level design is interesting. The visuals are very NES, and the music is jaunty, but it's impossible to appreciate it when you're trying to figure out what to do and why you keep dying. It flies too close to the NGP plus status, but crashes into the no below.
Ooh,
well,
I like the
feedback.
I like the play there.
I forgive him. I forgive him for not explaining the mechanics because they came back around and I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah, here's the thing that helped me this week. I'm a completionist, right? So I'm already trying to get every item, fill out everything. And so I think
in every door no matter what.
Right.
You're going to kill every enemy to see what it does once, at least, no matter what. So
I was already set up some for success. And then when I realized that some of the purchasable items were upgrades, then I was killing everything, which then helped with my experience. So it kind of, it rolled over into something that was super helpful for me. But you understand that all three of those so far were big no's. They were negatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hesitant negatives. Yes. There was some love in there, but, and I totally get it. And we were torn, too. Like, my, it's not the strongest plus I've ever given.
But that is indicative of almost every single one of our commentaries, except for, at least in part, Super Gamer Guy, who said,
okay,
Kid Icarus is often brought up in gaming circles as an NES classic, and it's not hard to see why. Despite its simple visuals and gameplay, the whole experience is just addictive to me. Controls are a little loose, but responsive, and the combat is super satisfying, especially in the latter levels, or later levels, after you become more powerful. The music and graphics are also pretty good, even if they are easy... Sorry, even if they are early NES fare, it helps that the game isn't crazy difficult, yet somehow it still manages to pull off some subtle complexities, like the training rooms and the store haggling. Is this the best NES game? No, but I think it is good enough to be NGP worthy.
Oh, we didn't even talk about either of those things, training rooms or haggling.
We mentioned
this game has too much to talk about.
It's got way too much.
He's totally right that as you progress and your character shoots faster and harder and your arrows become fire arrows, that it becomes even more enjoyable, I think. And so I like that.
Yeah, it does.
Sure. And as you get those three treasures, like a shield and the ability to fly and all of those things, I mean, it becomes a lot easier and cooler. But thank you all for your commentary and your thoughts on the Retro Game of the Week. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them. Please continue to send in your thoughts on the Retro Game of the Week. We love to include your thoughts and commentary on a future episode. But for now, we're going to set aside Kid Icarus, and we are going to randomly select from our ever-expanding Retro Master list and find out what we're playing for the next 7 days. We are staying vertical.
Weird.
But we are changing consoles. Come with me to the Taito developed and published arcade title from 1994 that is a vertical space shooter called Rayforce.
Wow. I feel like it's been a minute since we've had an arcade game.
I feel like it's been a minute as well. We have Taito is a name.
Yeah.
I don't know if
y'all
recall.
It. Tater.
Not potato. So not Tater.
Potato. Yeah, that's where mine goes to.
So we should have cut the episode already.
No,
or what are
no,
y'all
no,
doing?
No.
Okay. I don't remember all the games that Taito developed, but they did a lot, and I don't know them right now, but you can look that up and find the games that Taito did, but we're going to the arcade. It may have been a little bit since we played. This one is, again, a vertical space shooter that I believe, did it also come out on the Saturn version? Yeah, it did, and it was renamed as Galactic Attack, but we're going to try to play that arcade version this week.
Okay, yeah, that was a common theme, the space shooter back then, so we'll see.
Was it like a re-release on the other? Arcade games are harder to play, just honestly.
Oh, we'll maim it up,
getting
dude.
Them, and so if,
they yeah. are, but here's the thing. So it was published by Acclaim when it came to the home console later. And it was renamed Galactic Attack. We'll see. If it is the same gameplay, then it shouldn't matter. But we definitely want to get that original experience. And here's the thing, Nolan, Space Shooter was arcade, but the ones I felt that were kind of overhead vertical were, in the way that I'm looking, y'all aren't seeing the art right now, but in my mind, it looks like that 1941 or 1490, whatever, kinds of ones. But we're going to be set in space in this one, so that's super cool. Find a copy of Rayforce. It's one word, both the R and the F are capitalized. Find a copy of Rayforce this week. Play it along with us.
You can also join us in our official New Game Plus Discord server. Go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord. We need to hit 5 billion members by next weekend. So please, we be one of those people.
When you hop in Discord, you may run across some of our favorite people in the world.
Yeah.
Supporters of the show who go above and beyond, not just hanging out with us online, but supporting us on patreon.com. Folks like our producers, Amarlian, Austin, Ben, Bethany Fox, Bro Jim, Carrie, Dan the Man, Francesca, Corey, Maxima, Mr. Lattes, Secret Duck of Evermore, Shauna, Unbedavable, William, and Zion. Thanks so much for that ever-growing list. You guys are awesome. Our crazy wonderful directors who just support us on next level levels, Antonin, Garlisle, and Wardonis. And we also want to say, we already said that he was a producer, but we want to say welcome to Secret Duck of Evermore joining that producer pool this week. Welcome. Thanks so much.
Nice, Kenny. Flawless without any problems. All right. And you can follow us on any of our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. We have a few followers there now. They're not followers. Dang it. We have a few subscribers there. You can join us there. We're putting out content regularly. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Rayforce / Galactic Attack / Gunlock in European arcades. Until then, I'm still Kid Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Palutena.
None of us liked that, including Kenny saying his own name. And this has been New Game Plus.